My Love of Life Energy is a podcast created by Anna Scott. Anna knows that every human being sees life uniquely. In this podcast, she will talk to people and learn from them. These conversations are to shine the brilliance of each human being she speaks to. Join her. After each exploration, you will expand on your insights and see truth and beauty.
Good morning and good afternoon, and welcome to my podcast, My Love of Life Energy. And today I have the great honor of talking to Malachi Gillihan. I love saying his name. And I met Malachi through my wonderful organization of BNI, and had the just divine pleasure of being with him. And Malachi is a yogi. He's a trauma specialist. He is a spiritual counselor. And Malachi's energy is not like anything I've ever experienced. He has a power and a presence and a strong liberating force. So with that, Malachi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anna. It's good to be here.
It's great to be here. Do you remember the day when we were working together and I felt your energy and the liberation? Remember that moment?
I do, yeah.
What was that moment like for you? What's that energy like for you?
It's funny you ask, because I think that the experience that I have in general is, I don't know if it's because it's subtle or because it's constant or being used to it. But I think there was a surprise. I think like a sense of surprise that I had.
In what way?
In just in the moment, because I think that what you're describing is something that I'm aware that there seems to be a way that people respond to me, and I think that sometimes it will still take me by surprise when it's more, I think, like apparent, you know, or kind of being, or the attention is being put on it, like in that moment.
I guess the thing that strikes me about it is because your work is about liberating people. I mean, that's what I see you're up to in life, is liberating people from their trauma.
Yeah. And I think that, yes, that it's true. It is, I think, essential. I also think it's a very ancient kind of practice. I think that the language that we use right now, in some ways it's kind of specific to this moment. It's a term that I think is very useful in helping describe what really is a kind of like binding or constrictive kind of pattern of thinking, believing, behaving that I have experienced. I continue to experience the reverberations of it. And it's something that I think, because of its power and because of our the human tendency kind of habit to identify with our experiences, what we think about our experiences, what we believe about our experiences, that with the kinds of things that we call trauma, it's a very kind of like dense, powerful energy. It's like the gravitational force of the traumatic experience is very intense. And because of that, it's similar to, I think about the movie Interstellar or other kinds of movies that have presented us with these like visual experiences of seeing someone struggle with, and even in Interstellar, actually harness a really intense gravitational force. I think in Interstellar, for example, they were harnessing the energy of a black hole and this powerful force in a skillful way for their benefit. So when I think about the traumatic experience, I think about this really intense energy that has a very strong attractive force. And what does it attract? It attracts our attention to a great degree. It attracts the time that we'll spend thinking about it, doing things about it, whether it's avoidance or even kind of repeating behaviors, or if a person is aware of it, even like the time that they spend on recovery and healing, it's a very greedy kind of energy, if you will. Like it needs a lot, and it's not, I don't know if greedy is quite the right term, but maybe it's more about like the hunger of it in a way. Like it can consume a lot of energy and attention. And I think that part of that is necessary to recover and heal. And the way that I think a lot of folks live in a kind of coping, doing their best to kind of cope with the impact, it winds up continuing to be fed instead of released. And so there's kind of, it winds up being maintained. So all that is to say is that it's the reason why I think it receives a lot of attention is for good reason. It's a very powerful, attracting gravity. It has this pull to it. And so the work to be able to understand why that is, and to actually harness its energy, takes, I think, kind of a shift or like an insight into the nature of how it works, and then to use it for oneself instead of feeling like one's life is being controlled or destroyed by its impact.
I'm so curious. I had studied Aikido, and you, when I'm hearing you speak, I'm hearing Aikido. Mm-hmm. It's about harnessing or working with this trauma energy, and how do you work with it? I can see the repelling, like trying to get away from it, mm-hmm. which actually makes it bigger.
Yeah.
Or falling and collapsing into it, which makes us feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. And empty, but you're talking about flowing with it and using it or moving with it is what it feels like, and then transforming it.
Yeah. And I think the caveat that I want to share is that it is not easy. I think that the experience, if you use like a martial arts, let's go with the martial arts metaphor. So if I step into the ring and I am facing an opponent who is significantly bigger than my weight class and fearless and all these other things I might ascribe to it. There's a sense, if that's the situation, there's a sense of like, how in the world can I possibly face this? It makes me think of, I'm a big fan of the Marvel series. And Thanos in the kind of the arc of like the Avengers and like the Infinity Stones and all that. Thanos is this villain who, I mean, physically is bigger than all the Avengers. I think he's even bigger than the Hulk. He has all this training and all this ability that makes him seem like an impossible foe. So I think with one of the hallmarks of traumatic experience is a feeling of helplessness in the face of it, because these experiences are things that happened. They're not things that almost happened or could have happened, but they're things that actually did happen. And so there wasn't our ability in whatever moment that it happened, there wasn't our ability to fight it off. There wasn't our ability to get away from it. It happened. So any defense that we might have or that we had at that time was overwhelmed or thwarted. And so the part of that traumatic experience is that kind of feeling of helplessness in the face of what feels like a dominating force or energy. That's why I think of it again as like, if you think about it as this incredibly kind of powerful, dense, attractive gravitational field of some kind, I think that that's part of what helps to maybe shift some of the perspective and to see it more. It's almost like talking about it like energy. And I don't want to, and this is not to go into the field of like, oh, well, I'm going to check out now because now this dude's talking about energy. When you consider, if you consider a field that helps to kind of frame this, like interpersonal neurobiology, for example, the way that Dan Siegel describes this is that our systems, and when I say systems, I mean like our nervous systems, our mind body, our spirit, our system, if you will, is one that can handle a certain amount of energy and information at kind of a given time. And to make it really easy to think of, you can think about it like when you sit down to eat, there, you know, regardless of even like the people that we think that we see, you know, do it like a hot dog contest or something, and they're able to, you know, mind-blowingly consume 50 hot dogs in a single sitting, there's still a limit. There's still a limit that they reach. So in everyday experience, you can kind of think about like the amount of energy that you can kind of take in and process is kind of like the meals that you might eat. Like you sit down, you're able to consume a certain amount, and, you know, regardless of what your diet is or regardless of what you might think of your own diet, there's a certain usefulness that it has for your system. Like we need to eat. So we consume it, we consume water. And there's other kinds of energy that will come in, sunlight, interactions with other people and so forth. So our system has been made and is able to process quite a bit of energy and information on a daily basis and even in a single sort of instant. However, in an experience like trauma, there is something about that experience where the volume of the energy that's being experienced is too much in that instant to be able to process. And I'm sorry for some of the, I know there's a little bit of background noise, but it's just living in, you know, post-COVID time, being at home, but hopefully you can hear okay. But that's partly how Dan Siegel describes it, and that I found useful for myself was like, oh, like it's not my fault that I am struggling after this experience. I'm struggling with it intruding into my thinking. I'm struggling with it intruding into my dream life, into my relationships. It's having an impact. It's having an impact pulling my attention away from work or whatever else I might be, you know, tending to. It's not my fault that there are things that remind me of that experience and that, you know, kind of induce my system into a state of helplessness or fear or anxiety or vigilance or anger or shutdown or whatever that might be. It's not my fault. It's just the system is responding to an overwhelming incident. And, or it might be a series of overwhelming incidents. There's thankfully a considerable amount of research that's come out now that's demonstrated that things like bullying, or what people now term like microaggressions, how these things add up over time and result in post-traumatic stress symptoms that are similar to single incident kinds of experiences that a person might have, like sexual assault. So all that is to say is that there's something that's happening where it's overwhelming what our system is able to process and to manage. And so, sorry, so go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So all I was going to say is when that kind of overwhelm occurs, there is time that's needed to process what's happened. in to work through, because oftentimes these incidents also, there's not just a single sort of intrusion that happens and we're like, oh, okay, I need a week, or I need a month, or I need 6 months to just sort of like process it, to go on runs, to write, to do some art expression or like whatever tools I might use, and then it's over. Oftentimes what's happening with these experiences is that there's also some kind of impact to our framework for living in the world. So there's a betrayal that's happened by care providers, and somehow our map of the world, our understanding of how things are supposed to work, how people are supposed to behave, how consistent our needs are going to be met and so forth, like something happens that impacts this framework and it creates a disruption. And our ability, it challenges our ability to kind of make sense of what has happened and to integrate it into what usually is kind of like a new lay of the land, like kind of seeing the world in a different way. So all this is to say is that when people go through these things, it's not their fault. It really doesn't have to do much with them. It really just has to do with the human system is able to manage and process a certain amount of energy and information. And when these kinds of experiences happen that challenge that, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of information that needs to be processed. And there's disruptions to our ways of thinking and being in the world. There's disruptions in our beliefs. And so it takes time to be able to kind of, regain our footing, to even be able to begin processing. Like it's sort of like it throws us off our balance. And so even regaining one's balance is something that can be difficult to do before a person can then feel safe enough to take the time to get into the material of what happened, the specifics of it, how they feel about it, how it impacted them, how the tuning of their brain may have been impacted or altered as a result of this, memories that they may have in their body as a result. I could go on, but again, this is why I describe it as like, it is an intense energy field. Mm-hmm. It's an intense energy field. And it's an intense energy field for a reason, because there are all these different impacts that have happened as a result. And so to even begin to think of using the experience for oneself, when some of the initial process is just like, well, I didn't want that to happen. I don't want to think about the fact that it happened. I just want to move on. I don't want this to bother me. I just want to, I should be able to move past it. It shouldn't bother me the way that it is. Like whatever sort of self-talk continues after that. I think that it can take some steps to even get to a point where a person is like, wait a second, like I could actually use this for myself, and I could actually use something that feels like it has its grip on me. I could actually use it for my liberation. Like how? Like what the hell are you talking about? Just tell me how to get rid of it.
So I'm so curious, do you have an example of how somebody has used, like transformed this energy and used it for them?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can speak about this personally. The word that I use is a blend of our modern word trauma, which, is not really that modern a word. It comes from, I think, the Greek or Latin. I forget if it's Greek or Latin, but I should know this, being a trauma specialist. But off the top of my head, it's Greek or Latin. And it means like a wound. It's a pretty simple word, pretty simple meaning. So it's like, okay, so we're talking about a wound, or like one of my teachers likes to talk about it as an injury. We're talking about an injury that happened, not a disorder. It's not a disorder. It's an injury that happened. You don't call a broken arm a disorder. You don't call a chipped tooth a disorder. You call it an injury. Well, why? Well, something happened and something broke. Or something was wounded. And well, what also happened? Like, well, there's an intelligence in the body that repairs. There's an intelligence in the mind to also repair and to grow. And so the word trauma for me, I obviously spent a lot of time with it, studying it, researching it, working with others, but also living with it myself. And also being a yogi and training, there is a lineage in which people are given a name where there's Ananda is attached to it. So like Yogananda, for example, or Kriyananda, or Satchit Ananda. It's this idea of Ananda being bliss that's attached to another type of term. So with Yogananda, it's like the bliss of yoga, or with Kriyananda, it's like the bliss of Kriya. So I'm a napper. I like to take naps. My system needs rest. In order to kind of just be at its best. So I was napping at my school one day in between classes, and as I started to drift off, the word Tramananda came to me. Mm-hmm. And I realized that Tramananda was a way of very concisely encapsulating what it was that I had been writing about. There's a paper that I did in school called What Does It Mean to Heal Trauma? And I realized that I felt like this conversation is an important conversation to be having, because I think that what people think, first of all, it's kind of like the mind. When people say, well, the mind is this, and if you use your mind, and well, the mind behaves like, and whatever. If you take 10 different people, every single one of them is going to have a different definition of the mind, a different idea of what it means for them. And then when they communicate it, all those people they're talking with are going to have a different interpretation of what that person means when they say the mind and so forth. I think enlightenment is like this. I think the word enlightenment, when people say it, it's kind of like people are sort of like, all right, we're all lost in the right, in the general same direction, but what we actually mean or think about it is different. And so I think that trauma is similar. I think that what people mean, I think both trauma and trauma healing, I think that when people talk about it, I'm not even sure 100% of the time if people understand what they mean for themselves when they're trying to tell me, when they're trying to talk to me about trauma healing. I don't even know if they, and I'm not judging that. I think it's common for people to have a different sort of sense, and they think that they're talking about the same thing, but they're not. So when I was exploring what does it mean to heal trauma, I realized there are so many different ways that people can look at what does it mean to heal. Some people might think about it as cure. It's like we're eliminating symptoms and that's what it means. Other people might think about it more like recovery. So it's like, well, trauma destroyed my sense of safety, and so recovery and healing means I recover my sense of safety. And when I've recovered it, that's healing. And I don't think my purpose is to be like, well, one is wrong or right. It's more about like understanding these are different ways that people talk about it. So Tramananda gave me a way of concisely communicating, I think, what an aspect for me that of healing has been, which is realizing that Ananda or bliss is not what we, or I'll just say I hear. I used to think that bliss meant like ecstasy, like almost like both embodied, but also mental, this kind of like pleasure and indescribable joy that was kind of mind blowing and just like awesome. Just like, oh. And I remember having this insight when I was doing some of my own recovery work in a men's group a few years ago, where I realized that it was another man was sharing about his experience of just this range of intensity that he was going through in his life. And all of a sudden I was looking at him and I realized that what he was describing was Ananda. It was the bliss of the ability to experience this incredible range of feeling. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It was not just one end of the spectrum. It was the ability to withstand, to experience the entire range of feeling. And I realized that what he was talking about, I was like, oh, like that is part of the divine. Mm-hmm. Like the divine has, that, I think that's part of like why in yoga, what, like the, one of the names of the divine is Sat Chit Ananda. It's being, consciousness, and bliss. But the bliss part is, again, it's sort of like, it's the bliss of the intensity of this incredible range where the divine has the ability to experience the explosion of a star. Hmm. Like, I can't imagine the sensation of that, but holy shit. And then there's like the human experience, which, you know, can feel incredible. And it can also feel like, how can I possibly survive what's happening right now? So I've had, over the course of my life, I've had this range of experience where there have been times where I'm like, it is not possible for me to feel more joy right now. And there have been times when I thought I was going to die because the experience was just, it was so bad. And so what the Tramananda piece encapsulated for me was those moments when I have been able to, it's almost like surrender and open to, like, to remain open and surrender in the face of the most intense experiences. And when I was able to do that, there was something that it's hard to describe it other than liberating. And so the Ananda, or like the bliss of that moment, was being able to open to the entire range, which included the parts of my life that have been like challenging beyond what I thought I would be able to.
Yeah. That's liberation. There was a journey I did one time on psilocybin, and I was in 6 hours of pain, like intense physical, like no other. And finally I surrendered to it and just started moving with it. And it was the most ecstatic thing I've ever experienced in my life, was being, not fighting the pain, opening up and moving with it. And I think that's the liberation. As my mind doesn't fight it, my emotions, I just learn how to be open to it all.
There's an inspiring moment in, for me, in, I've been appreciating the Dune series, like the new movies that have come out, and there's this kind of like mantra in it where the mother of Paul, who's sort of like this main character, is repeating this mantra about, that begins with, fear is the mind killer. And what she's helping him do in this moment is to realize that this experience or test or like ordeal that he's going through, it's difficult, but the thing that would cause the suffering in the moment is the fear that becomes this condensed kind of energy that destroys the mind. And so what she does is kind of support him in this moment of remembering that fear is the mind killer. It's not this experience that he's having where it's just this intense pain in his hand. And it's intense enough that, you know, his eyes are beginning to stream, but it's like, it's the ability to be with that moment and to actually see the process of what's happening for what it is. And then to be able to find a liberation and a power in that moment.
Well, that's what you're here to do, is liberate people. Your energy is designed to liberate people by being able to be with it all. And that's the power of you. Because you can be with it all.
Yeah.
And allow somebody else to be with it all. And with that, we are at our time. I can't believe it. So, Malachi, if people want to be liberated from their trauma, how do they find you? Where do they go?
They can contact me through the website, malachigillihan.com. Or just my email is pretty simple, malachigillihan@gmail.com.
Great. To reach out. Be there. So if somebody is struggling with trauma, I can feel that you have the capacity to be present with it all.
Yes.
And when we can be present with it all, we're liberated. And that's
we are.
A big black hole that you can dance with. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna.